Hi, my name is Giovanni Pino, and this is Uncommon.
Hi, my name is Ellie Weisman, and this is Uncommon.
Uncommon and Uncommon Clips are produced by Narelle, a unique digital agency. Head to narelle.com to learn more. That's NARELLE.com.
I'm just really interested. I sort of had not this epiphany, but this realization because of what has happened probably in the last 6 months with China on trade. You know, you both came in for an interview and founded the business at probably one of the most fascinating times, I'd say, in the history of Australia's trade. The only other time I could think about it was World War II, when we split from the UK and moved to sort of the US focus. The only other time might have been, I think it was like the 70s, 80s, where we pivoted. The country just moved away from the UK when they left the EU. They went to the EU and then it all became about Asia. And we're all in on Asia now. I mean, geopolitically, everything we do as a country has always been about the fact that we're on an island, and because of that, and we're rich in resources. Yeah. We've got lots of good shit here that we can ship out to other people, and because of that, we're good traders. We're good, like, we're mercantile in terms of the way that we operate as a country. We send out lots of stuff and buy stuff to bring it back in,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
And you guys are sort of really at the pinnacle of that, because we've had this era where the balance of trade was in the negative, and now we're finally going in the positive, and sort of Australians and Australian businesses are cashed up for various reasons, and they've got these opportunities, and they're realising that the trade of goods is sort of what we're good at. And you're probably getting more and more people hitting you up and being like I think I was reading the other day that although all these retail firms have shut down, the pivot to e-commerce has been so massive that the prices for what are they, like, factories or factory spaces that can be converted to warehouses has gone up like 30% in Queensland and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Because supply chain has become monumental just in the space of the year.
That's fair. No surprise at all.
You know, you guys are probably part of the next generation where I think in the few decades this will be the trend of what is Australian trade.
It's true.
And so I was just curious, like, what do you see as the headwinds and the tailwinds for Australian traders of goods who are in this sort of e-commerce, wholesale, whatever you want to call it, space?
It's a good question. I mean, it's so broad. So what are the trends? Where's it going?
What are the trends? Like, what are you guys wary of? Like, as an example, I've noticed you've invested a lot into an Indian team.
Yeah.
So what are the things that you're thinking about in your own business that will probably be lead indicators to what eventually affects people down the track?
So definitely, as you mentioned, we're heavily investing in resources and growing our footprint in countries outside of China. So that obviously from, I guess, a geopolitical standpoint, you know, obviously a lot of companies are wanting to diversify, have traditionally imported or purchased goods from China. They're obviously wanting to look outside of China. That's, you know, thanks to the trade wars with Trump and a whole bunch of different sort of political things, and COVID hasn't helped that. So, yeah, definitely we're focusing on India, we're focusing on Vietnam, we're focusing on Taiwan, Thailand.
And that's, you know, it's more and more prevalent. Like, for instance, a really big indicator for us is just even through our social media and paid ads, the amount of negative comments you now see for Chinese goods or people
buying.
There's this stigma that's out there at the moment.
So has that meant that you guys are sort of thinking about sourcing locally in terms of building resources there as well?
Yes. Okay. Very, very proudly.
Because that's become like, we had a brand come in recently that's launching a steel, it's like a grinder sort of plate that you put on like a, for sheet metal fabrication workers or like boiler makers and stuff like that. And they're like one of two in Australia that make it. But, you know, the comment is people don't want Chinese made stuff.
Yeah.
They want at least Australian-owned stuff.
Yeah.
Like, it can be made elsewhere, but Australian-owned is like fucking paramount.
The hard part is everyone says it, but no one wants to pay for it.
Exactly.
Yeah. And you know, it's hard as it is. We love China, like in the sense of the team that we have there, the most beautiful people.
The people,
they're just like you and I, right?
Yeah.
Some things that they can't control, right? The government influences. Like we can't control the way that the government portrays Australians.
Yeah.
It's the same there as well. The people that we've hired and that we get to work with, some of them we've worked with for over a year, you know, 16 months, 18 months. They're great people. You know, they've got lives. Incredible. I know that they've married, they've got kids. They're just like anyone else that you know. The hard part is China still is the leader in some or a majority of categories of production right now.
Plastics, electronics.
Yeah, even batteries, because they're so set up in the sense of, you look at, for instance, your iPhone. It's not all made in one factory. There's components that come from one factory, another. So even if you went to build iPhones in India or Vietnam or even set up your own phone manufacturing business, you need all those other players also set up in the country as well. Otherwise, you're importing parts and you're assembling it somewhere else.
Yeah, that was actually just on that. I remember when we caught up for lunch and you were talking about that fact, and that was when I had the realization that, you know, what you guys are doing and offering for people is really like bringing in-house, like an agency would, bringing all of the components of literally building the thing yourself.
Exactly.
Because a lot of people think, okay, I'm going to make an e-commerce product. It's going to be, I'm going to try and beat Zoom. So I'm going to make these recorders, right?
Yeah.
And I'll just go to a manufacturer who makes recorders. But actually where the real value is building, designing the recorder yourself.
Exactly.
With a specialist, and then buying all the components yourself and just having it assembled. And that's when you were talking about those components is what really drove me. So when people say, why are you investing in all these different countries? Shouldn't it just be like this one new country or whatever? It's because you're trying to collate all these pieces of paper to make a book.
And each country, you know, like for instance, India or Vietnam, they're going to have their own categories.
Specialty,
exactly right. You're not going to just say, I buy all my products from India now, because India's not going to be set up in the way to be able to supply or manufacture those goods.
Mm.
You know, a big part of what dictates where products are made is, you know, access to technology, access to raw materials, access to or government support. You need a good mix of all those things together for it to be viable, right? It's only once, you know, those categories are established, like, for instance, India has their own foundries for steel.
Yes.
So then you can start having, you know, structural steel made there. You can start, you know, having the mills. That's when it works, right? But if you try to do the same in Vietnam, there's no mills or there's no foundries there, you can't say, I'm going to have my steel made from Vietnam.
Yeah.
So you're limited to what that country's investing their time and resources into as well.
Yeah, so the argument that Australia should become self-sufficient is just never going to be a reality, simply because each country will always have its own competitive advantage.
Exactly right.
It's very difficult.
And that's why, you know, in a way, businesses like yours will flourish, because there will always be a distributed supply chain in some way.
And that these emerging countries like India and Vietnam, China's gotten quite, you know, good at doing Western business, right? They know how to invoice, they know how to interact, they know how to, you know, the flow. Countries like Vietnam and India, they're still kind of green in that sense, especially these emerging factories or industries. You know, they'll need a hand on both ends, not just someone here who we represent to find the factories, but also the factory themselves of how do we filter what they do and say that doesn't freak out someone here, because they don't have that experience in, let's say, exporting or communication.
Yeah, a lot of it is always communication based.
Exactly right. How do you sort out those problems?
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably the real value component, is like just trying to communicate to that person, it's okay, this is what is actually happening.
You. Yes, you. Are you intrigued by this episode? If so, go to our footer on the website, NERALLE.com, NERALLE.com. We're going to give you an insight each week. It's going to be on business, marketing, or a topic that we covered in the episode at all. We'd love your support, and it would help us in developing the intellect around this series. But without going on too much longer, let's get back into this episode.
I'm curious then as to, apart from the obvious ones in Vietnam and India, which have been like the at the tip of everyone's tongue, I think there was even like some event that the PM went to at the start of 2020 in Vietnam with some trade delegation of some sort to promote Vietnam trade, Vietnamese trade. Yeah. But are there other countries that are surprising you at the moment or intriguing you?
Definitely. I think for where we're located, other countries within Southeast Asia, so Indonesia was definitely going to become a manufacturing country, as well as the Philippines to an extent. What you'll see though also is even parts of Europe, if you've been into H&M recently or Zara, you'll see on the back of the tags, made in Portugal, made in Turkey.
Spain.
So,
Morocco.
What a lot of bigger businesses are doing now.
A lot of them in Greece, I've noticed a lot.
They'll have the mills, but these big businesses will actually set up manufacturing hubs in these areas that are logistically make sense. So if you're serving European clients for fashion and clothing, you'll have a production hub located somewhere within Europe. Same for Asia, the Asia markets, you'll have factories set up in Vietnam. So you'll actually see logistics play a big role in where people set up their manufacturing hubs because it takes weeks and weeks to move goods from, you know, Europe to Australia. It's you know, four times, is it four or three times the length of time to send something from Turkey to Melbourne than it is to send it from Indonesia to Melbourne.
Yeah.
You know, and those things really impact a business.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, and there's some interesting trends when it comes to that as well that I want to get into. Like this thing about CANZIC. I don't know if you've heard about that, but like a free trade agreement or a free movement agreement between Canada, New Zealand, Australia. Basically extending our agreement between New Zealand and Australia with the UK and Canada,
Oh, cool.
Which would open trade significantly.